Hey everyone, this is Ismay, musician, host, and creator of Finding Lucinda. In anticipation of our documentary film coming out this fall, I've put together an in-depth companion podcast. It delves into the origins and artistry of legendary singer-songwriter Lucinda Williams. New episodes are out every other week on the BGS Podcast Network. So join me on this creative journey.
Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the bluegrass situation. I'm your host, Cindy House, and hello and welcome. So nice to be with you today. Thanks for finding the podcast. We are back after a bunch of reissue episodes where we went back and revisited six of our favorite Basic Folk episodes of the past. If you missed those, you'll want to go back and check them out. The last one we did was Indigo Girls, also Joya Ladakun, Chris Thiele, Dar Williams, John Hyatt, and Anais Mitchell. You can find them wherever you listen to your shows or at basicfolk.com. Today, I am so excited to welcome back my best friend, Tammy Nielsen. We're not really best friends, but it definitely feels that way every time we talk. I'm so thrilled to have her back on. Before we get into Tammy, let's talk about ways to stay in touch. The best way to do that is to sign up for Basic Folk's monthly email. You can do that by going to the link in the show notes. Click on the sign up for the newsletter button. You can also go to basicfolk.com and sign up there. It's a once a month email that lets you know what's going on with the podcast, who's been on recently, who's coming up, and how we're feeling about all of it. You can also follow us on social media. We are at Basic Folk Pod on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. We also are a listener-supported podcast and rely on listener contributions to keep in operation. If you'd like to help us out with our operating costs and make a contribution, that would sure be swell. You can go to the link in the show notes again or basicfolk.com/donate. Okay, let's get into it. Tammy Nielsen. In recent years, Tammy has been learning to carry both great joy and great sorrow simultaneously, as we all have. The New Zealand-based Canadian-born powerhouse's new album, Neon Cowgirl, is named after the towering electric figure that sat on Broadway in Nashville, watching over Tammy's career since she was 16 years old. The songs were born from a five-month family road trip combined major musical tour that would allow Tammy the once-in-a-lifetime chance to really give it her all with her career. It was the chance for her children to experience what her life was like at their age, touring the country with her family's band, led by her eccentric and wildly lovable dreamer father, Ron Nielsen. Before she got the chance to hit the road, however, Tammy landed in the ICU with sepsis and nearly lost her life. She blessedly recovered, but found that all of her priorities centered around the trip had changed. In our conversation, we talk about the songs on Neon Cowgirl, her exciting performances at the Grand Ole Opry, and her special friendship and collaborations with Willie Nelson. We also talk a lot about her brother, Jay Nielsen. For all of her career and life, Jay has been by her side as her guitarist, co-writer, and musical partner. Last July, Jay suffered a rare, debilitating brain injury that he is still recovering from. Tammy and Jay have not been able to perform together since that injury, and she shares what it's been like to be without Jay and how it's been for him to be so public about his condition. Tammy and I first connected during the pandemic. She was a guest on Basic Folk after she released her incredible 2020 album, Chickaboom. Since then, I have loved following her career, listening to her new music, and experiencing her highs and lows. She really is good at connecting to people, even on social media. It's incredible. She's one of my favorite guests, and I'm thrilled to welcome Tammy Nielsen back to talk about her wonderful new record. We'll take a listen to clips from Neon Cowgirl throughout the episode. So sit back and enjoy. Listen to Tammy Nielsen on Basic Folk.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. I'm so happy to be talking to you.
I know. It feels like ages. And like, I mean, let's just be real. You're my favorite interviewer. So.
What? Oh,
and
wow.
I'm not just blowing smoke because, you know, but I'm always, it just feels like catching up with a girlfriend. That's like the best kind of interview, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love talking to you. I'm obsessed with you. When we were trying to arrange this, Angie, your publicist, passed on the message that you said I was your boo. So I'm very pleased to hear that.
Even when I'm with my boo.
Yes. Okay, let's talk about the Neon Cowgirl. But first, in a roundabout way, thinking about how this new record is dedicated to the Neon Cowgirl, who is towering over Broadway, the main drag in Nashville, representing a lifelong dream of chasing Nashville, chasing country music. So there's been like a lot of ups and a lot of downs for you. Some very recent, really rough downs and some incredible pinch me moment ups. And it makes me wonder, like, what has been your relationship to acceptance, like on both ends of the roller coaster? What has your ability to accept looked like?
Oh, man. Yeah. That acceptance and surrender was kind of my word for the year 2023, particularly when I went through some health issues. And, you know, I really do struggle with that. It's something that, you know, I am very used to being the one that hustles and works hard and is really, really productive. And so to kind of for your body to make you unable and incapable is a really hard thing to accept. But it's kind of, you know, the longer you kick against it, the more you struggle. And you do have to kind of come to that place, but it's hard when you're a fighter and you're someone who's used to like rising to a challenge and you see obstacles as something to overcome, you know, and it's something that's kind of built into you, especially as a musician, a creative, is to have resilience. And so to be put in a position outside of your control by circumstances outside of you, things happening to you that, you know, your health particularly is something that's really, really hard to come to that acceptance, but you're kind of forced to.
So you wrote this record on the bus while you and your family were crisscrossing the U.S. for 5 months. And you wanted your family to experience how you grew up in the Nielsen Family Band. And you also said it was my once in a lifetime chance to really give it my all with my career. So you were kind of alluding to this in your last answer. But leading up to that trip, you got very sick, like battling for my life in ICU with sepsis sick.
Yeah.
You, thank God, recovered and took that trip. But how do you think your near-death experience changed your priorities of what that trip was?
It became something completely different. You know, at first, this is a trip that we had planned for years and years, basically since having kids. You know, I had always said to my husband, like, one day I want my kids to experience living, you know, for a chunk of time where I'm from. I don't, you know, having little two-week visits every 5 years of their life, it's not the same. And I want them to kind of feel that ownership. And so it was a trip we'd planned for a long time, but and planned, but also it was something that, you know, my management at the time was like, you know, you have to be here in the market. You have to be on the ground to make a real dent. It's really hard to,
like, in the United States.
In the United States, in the US, and you need to be in the market and on the ground. And, you know, everyone talks about Nashville being a 10-year town. And even though I've probably lived there for 10 years over the 47 years of my life, but it's always been broken up and sporadic throughout my life. And yeah, so it was always kind of drilled into me, like, you have to be here on the ground to make a difference. And it's, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, it's hard to advance your career in 2-week increments a couple times a year, you know? And so I thought, well, this is my chance. Like, I'm going to have my whole family with me. I'm not going to be missing anybody. I'm not going to have to race back for anything. This is my chance to really give it a really good kick at the cat and just full barrels blazing, you know? And life had other plans. And, you know, 2 months before we were supposed to leave, I was in ICU I was in the hospital for a month and in ICU with sepsis and a collapsed lung of all things. So struggling just to breathe, let alone sing, and lying in that hospital bed thinking, is this it? Like, I'm never going to sing again. I don't know that I'll have that lung capacity or power. And this trip suddenly turned into, you know, there were no cylinders or guns blazing, you know, it was just survival and healing. Mm. And what that became instead was something really beautiful. It was this time with my family and time spent with my children. Not, you know, I was doing shows throughout, but it wasn't like, you know, as full on as it was going to be if I'd been fully well. And yeah, so really having that time to just slowly meander around from one coast to the next and back again over the course of 5 months with my children and my husband and in a 40-foot motorhome, and really appreciate being alive, you know, like it changes everything. It changes the way you view life. It changes your perspective on what holds importance and what doesn't. And suddenly, you know, having that time to spend with them while still doing my music, but that wasn't the number one priority. It was like, it's all part of the journey together. And when you have, you know, when you look death in the face and realize, you know, I had this like, I don't know if I've told anyone this. I've had this like vision. I don't know if it was morphine or if it was like, you know, if it was the morphine or if it was this vision, but I felt like I was at this crossroads and it was almost like in these sand dunes, like in New Zealand, in Motuai, where close to where I live. And there were these paths in the sand dunes and one was going off to the left. And I knew if I went down that path, that was it. Like I was leaving this life. And the other path, it had the silhouette of my husband and my children and they were standing on that path. And at the time I was in a delirium of pain and I just thought, I can't take care of them. I have to go on this other path. I have to leave this world because I don't think I can keep going this way. Mm. And what struck me in that moment was there was no guitar on that path. There was nothing musical on that path that kept me in this world that was standing, saying it's this importance or moving on. So yeah, it really brought things into laser focus.
Wow. Yeah. So I did a whole bunch, like I did a deep dive on the record and all the stories and what you've been going through. And I was like, you know, outside with the dog today, just like thinking in general of like, what is like actually going on with Tammy and like, what's going on with me? And like, maybe like, where are the parallels? And like, I have definitely come to recognize that like, I once thought I was like a super career driven person, you know, but I have come to find that that's like not where true happiness lays. And I also feel like subtly I've like known that throughout my whole life.
Yeah, it's like we do all these things. What are we doing it for? And I think like for myself, that's always been the baseline. That's always been whether it was my family band growing up, you know, I was doing it to be with my family. And then when my dad passed away, it was like, okay, this is to further his legacy and and make sure I build on the foundation he worked so hard to lay in my career. And then when you have kids, you're like, this is for them. Like, I'm building something for them to stand on when I'm gone. Mm-hmm. And so it's always a part of it. But I think that throughout the journey, there's so much sacrifice that comes with, especially a music career and physically being away, that there's sacrifice on my part. There's sacrifice on my husband and my children, you know, and like getting to have that moment in time after having such a life defining experience, having them with me, it was heaven. It was heaven on earth, like living the dream. And I wish I could have them in my back pocket at all times. And I always have. But there's still that continuing balance of like, you know, my boys are getting older. They have lives of their own. They have friends and things they want to do and achieve in their lives.
Yeah.
And so it's not like they're a puppy I can just put in a kennel and take with me everywhere I go, you know? And so that's always the struggle and the pull. But I think it's finding that balance of like everything that I do and say yes to in my career are things that are going to hopefully in some way advance and make our collective sacrifice as a family worthwhile. It makes things, when something like that happens, it makes things really clear, like what you say no to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what's going to waste your time. You know, I think when you're talking about like that career driven thing, especially when you're like building a career and you're a self driven person, especially in the industry we're in, where it's so much of it is siloed and insular, like that you say yes to everything. And you're like, every opportunity, I've got to take it. I've got to hustle. I've got to, you know, you never know which opportunity. And I think that's gone. You know, that part is gone. It's letting go of things that you're like, oh, what if this is the moment? And you kind of have to let that go and go.
Yeah.
If this is supposed to happen, it's not going to be through one thing or one person. You know, it will find its way back to me. Ugh. Yeah. It's hard to say no, though, when you've done it for decades.
Yeah, yeah.
You've said yes for decades. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Tammy, we cannot make this whole interview about this topic, but I like want to talk to you about it forever. But I do want to ask you about your brother, Jay, who is doing an amazing job recovering from a brain injury he had last July in 2024. So you and Jay's wife have helped run a GoFundMe for him and his family. And I feel like, Tammy, you're like fairly comfortable sharing things about your own life to the world. And I'm not so sure what Jay's like in that regard, but what has it been like for Jay and his family to be public about what's going on? Like, was it hard for Jay to want to let people know what's happening?
Yeah, like this... anything I share is 100% checked with Jay first. I think because both of us grew up, you know, in front of audiences and on stages, there is definitely that unhealthy balance of sharing too much sometimes or not keeping things for ourselves that are private. And so it's kind of always figuring out how to navigate that. And anything that I share, it was months before we went public, letting people know what had happened. I think it was September. It happened in July. And it was not until Jay was able to make the decision himself whether he wanted that public. Because I said to him, you know what this will bring? Like, it will bring questions. It will bring people messaging you. It will bring strangers contacting you, and that in itself can be really, really exhausting and draining, even when people are fully well intentioned. And so we discussed it, and I said I wanted to start fundraising, but in order to do that, obviously we would have to let people know what was happening, and asked how he felt about that. And I think it's a balance of like, there are some things he wants to keep private. And so, you know, he didn't want photos of himself going through what he's going through or real specific details. So we've kind of, I think Lindsay, his wife, and I have kind of built this like little buffer of protection around him and my other brother, Todd. So all three of us have kind of been like just doing as he wished and being that buffer. And I said to Lindsay, even when we did the fundraiser, I said, now you realize this is going to be a lot because she's already carrying a lot. It's a lot of communication. So I kind of try to navigate that as much as I can for her. But I think in this case, you know, Jay, he's just overwhelmingly grateful for the support that people, the love, just an outpouring from people of love and support. And that has carried him through, you know, and when he can't see people in person or have conversations with them, you know, and we let him know all the messages and all the people that have donated, and that just, it just lifts him. And so it's, I think it's a really important thing. I think we made the right choice in letting people know, because if you don't, then you don't get that community if people don't know. So I think that having that community, even if it's not in person, has made such a massive difference in his mental health and his determination going forward.
What has it been like for you to keep at your career without Jay around and kind of like, I don't know if he's like completely out of it or if he's like working in a limited capacity, but what has that been like for you?
Jay is not in a position to perform, or he's just in survival mode right now and recovering. And that's his full-time job, is physio and rehab and all of those things. That's his full-time day in, day out job, is just to get functioning again, the basic functions. So I definitely was in a place when all this happened that I was seriously considering just stopping. It happened quite close to, we were supposed to be having our Grand Ole Opry debut, and you know, all of these incredible things were starting to happen at the exact same time that all of this happened. And I remember saying to my husband, I'm like, I don't understand. You know, we've been like tilling this dry ass soil our whole lives. And now these little green sprouts are starting to come up, and this happens, and he's not next to me on stage. And I was sitting in my living room in New Zealand a week before the Opry debut and pondering, what do I do? Like, do I cancel and wait until he's better so he can do it with me? Do I just pull the plug on all of this? And was sitting in my living room crying, and my FaceTime started ringing, and it was Cactus Moser, who is Wynonna Judd's husband. And he had music directed, he'd been the MD for a show I'd done back in April at the Ryman. I was asked to be part of this big Patsy Cline tribute with a star-studded cast, which included Wynonna, Ashley McBride, and Pat Benatar. Like, what the hell? How was I there?
Was Crystal Gayle there?
Crystal Gayle was there. Like, yeah. Who wasn't there? Tom Hanks was there, for God's sake. It was just insane. And when I met Wynonna, I was like, I don't care who else I meet. I just want to meet Wynonna. She's been my idol my whole life. And, you know, whenever these things happen, big moments in your career, that's when you miss your loved ones the most. And this was when Jay was still healthy. But I always miss my dad when these things happen. And I have this letter that I carry with me everywhere that he wrote me. And it ends, it was when I moved to New Zealand, and he was encouraging me to, you know, keep going with my career.
He knew where it was at.
Yeah. He's like, even if you're starting over on the other side of the world. And he finished the letter saying, keep on emailing, keep on calling, keep on knocking, keep on, keep on, keep on. And so I read this letter, as I do, it's like falling apart in my, I have it with me everywhere I go. And I read it backstage at the Opry. And I went to meet Wynonna. And she was so lovely and gracious. And we got a little selfie and we were chatting. And then she had to go and sing. And right before she left the room, she took my hands and she looked into my eyes and she said, keep on, keep on, keep on. Three times.
No. Like, Wynonna.
I know. And so this was the last time I saw her. And then fast forward, you know, I'm in my living room contemplating, like, do I quit? Do I cancel everything that's coming up and wait for Jay to be better? And my phone rings and it's Cactus's phone. And I thought, oh, maybe this is a butt dial. Like, why would he be FaceTiming me? And so I let it ring a bit and then it kept going. So I thought, okay, so I picked it up and I my makeup was all like washed off and I was in my sweats. And it was Wynonna Judd FaceTiming me. And I'm still like my brain just goes into shock. And she was just saying congrats on the Opry and how much she loved my music, which was insane to me. And then we're just having surface chit chat. I'm bubbling over, excited. And then she just says, honey, how's your mental health? And I just burst into tears. And I said, oh God, I don't want to trauma dump on Wynonna Judd, you know,
not again.
Like, this is like 5 minutes into like chatting with her. And I said, well, I'm walking through something right now. That's the hardest thing I've ever had to walk through. And she said, tell me what's happening. And I told her about my brother. And I said, I'm actually sitting here contemplating whether or not to cancel my Opry debut. And she said to me, honey, I'm going to tell you something. You know, the morning after I lost my mom, I had to accept our Lifetime Achievement Award at the Country Music Hall of Fame in a ceremony. And she said, and people looked at me and they said, oh God, you're so strong. And she said, I'm not strong, but you have a purpose that you were put on this earth to do. And no matter what storms swirl around you, you will be given the strength to walk through this.
Whoa.
And I, so I said to my husband after this phone call, I'm like, I don't understand why this is all happening now. Like, why, you know, well, Jay's not here to share it with me. And, you know, and he said something really interesting. He's like, I think because you would give up otherwise. Like, it takes Wynonna Judd FaceTiming you and telling you not to give up to keep you from giving up. And that's why you need something so big to keep going forward. And when I got to see my brother and visit him, it was the week before I was playing the Opry, flew to Toronto, and we were in the hospital. He was in the hospital. And I said to him, I don't know if you remember everything we had coming up, but there's one pretty big thing that's coming up. And it's the Opry next week. And he said, oh, I'm not going to be well enough by then. I said, I know that. I know you're not going to be well enough. Oh. And I said, listen, if you want me to wait for you, I will pull the plug on it and I'll wait until you're better. And he said, hell no. <He's> like, Because even going into like record this album, it was Jay was in a coma when I recorded this album.
Oh my God, Tammy.
And I was like, do I go forward with this? Do I drop everything and fly home? And after lots of talks with Lindsay, his wife, and my husband, we decided, you know, she said, like, he's not going to even know you're here. Like, and you keep going. He'll be more upset if you don't record. Because Jay wrote half the songs on this album.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And so for me, even though my heart was in Toronto and I wanted to be there and physically for myself, for Jay, if I really wanted to help him long term, it was recording his songs, having something for him to wake up to and get better for.
Mm.
And hopefully, you know, financially, he will be helped by having half the album with his co-writes on it and his songs on it. Mm. And so all those things are kind of what got me through recording that album. It was just something to kind of pour my focus into, to be like, this is going to help him the most going forward. Mm. And so that's again, like what Wynonna said, it wasn't strength. It wasn't being strong. You know, it was like, okay, this is what's going to help him the most. So this is what Big Sister's got to do. Yeah. Yeah.
I do want to say that Wynonna Judd song is incredible. And you wrote up a track by track for the album that I was reading. And that song Keep On is inspired by that encounter with Wynonna Judd. So mm-hmm. I wanted to share a little clip of that song. And then I was going to ask you about Willie Nelson.
Once knew a prophet and he wrestled a bear on a rocky mountain highway in an answered prayer. He gave me his voice in the cross I bear, and he sings when I open my mouth. He danced with the devil till he saw the sun. Sometimes he lost, sometimes he won. Holy fire, a blazing tongue, now I'm the keeper of the flame he tended.
Also, in recent years, you have cultivated a really lovely relationship with Willie Nelson. And I know it's like, was like a lifelong dream to meet him and tour with him and play with him. And you've done so many wonderful things with Willie. Like, what is something surprising about being in his orbit that you didn't expect?
That he is the least celebrity I've ever met. like he has maintained being the same down to earth person. And I think the thing, I don't know if that's surprising as much as it is inspiring. When touring with him these last couple weeks, and I was so struck by his team and his crew. You know, there are people who have been with him for 40, 50 years.
Wow.
On his crew, in his band. Like,
do they all have nicknames?
I'm sure.
Sawdust and Chip.
Absolutely. That's like totally what it is. And like, they definitely all have nicknames. And these are the people who have done life with him. And he is such a generous, loyal person. I mean, that speaks volumes. He takes care of his people for decades and decades and their families. When you play on one of his tours, it was interesting because one night I had Micah come up and play with me, his son Micah. And I said to the stage manager, is that okay? Like, is it okay if I have Micah join me and can we have an extra mic? And he said, nothing's a problem. And he said, everybody shares here and the artist sets the tone. And he said, Willie is an open arms policy. And that filters down right to every crew member. So everybody is an open arms policy. And, you know, when you're 92 years old and you've been doing this your whole life and you're a global superstar, I am absolutely amazed at how somebody like of that stature can maintain humility and generosity and grace and all those things. It's just such a testament to what kind of a person he is and his character.
I don't know if I messaged you on Instagram a picture of me and Lucas Nelson, and I really wanted to talk about Lucas Nelson. And I met him. He came to my radio station in Pittsburgh in 2018, and I wanted to take a picture of him and our afternoon host because they were like doing an interview together, so it makes sense that they get a picture. And so I took the picture, and he was like, "Can you take a picture? Like, can we take a picture together?" I was like, "Okay, yeah, sure." And then that man like stood next to me and he held my waist and I was like, are we married now? Wow. Like,
yeah, he turned you straight, babe. Like for at least it's like 30 seconds.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, for 30 seconds. I love my wife. We are married. I am a homosexual. But Lucas Nelson, like, if you get the opportunity to take a picture with him and he grabs your waist,
it's game over.
You're not going to be upset about it.
No. Yeah.
Anyways, enjoy that picture.
I'm going to.
In your DMs. Okay, I got a couple questions about some of these songs on Neon Cowgirl. Foolish Heart. Wow. Opening number. Wow.
I'll burn through love so true, like a cigarette. Tragedy plays with me like a marionette. I'm just a heart, a silly old.
Okay, so this is your homage to Roy Orbison. Mm. And as the story goes, your dad at one time opened for Roy when you were a newborn baby and asked if he wouldn't mind taking a picture with you, a baby, so no one can say no to that.
Right.
I love in your description of that moment, you say, I like to think of this moment as my true christening.
Yeah.
So why was it important to start the record with this song? Like, how is Foolish Heart setting the stage?
I think, like my last album, Kingmaker, like the first song for me sets the tone. And I like to think of it as like you're walking into a movie theater and it's dark and you're sitting down and the curtains open and you want to be like hit with like friggin' Gone with the Wind. You want like the magic to hit you and be like, transport me, you know? And so for me, that opening song is like, buckle up, we're going to go on a ride, and, you know, inviting people to take a journey with me. That's, you know, parts cinematic, and because, you know, as an artist, you want every listener to hopefully have that movie playing in their mind while you're taking them.
Gen Z say like wig, with their wig, wig, that song wig.
Yes.
And your wig flies off.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Hopefully not Tammy's.
Yeah. Yeah. I have had that happen on stage.
Oh no.
I've been going so hard that like my wig starts like creeping back, and there's no better compliment than when you blow your wig on stage. You know, you've left it all up there. Yeah.
Nice.
Stop, cup of black coffee. Hey, 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 put my last 10 bucks of quarters in the gas tank. Willie on the radio keeping me awake. Pull off the Cadillac Ranch on the interstate in the pouring rain. Hey, hey, hey.
The next song I wanted to ask you about was Salvation Mountain, which is chronicling your 5-month tour across the country with your family. So this song is what I would call an exasperated Tammy song. Well, at least like the verses seem like exasperated, and the chorus and the bridge maybe are like sweet relief. Mm. How do you see exasperation and relief in Salvation Mountain?
I think that this song, I mean, the chorus is saying, been down for so damn long, Lord, I need some elevation, you know? And so it's, and it comes straight after being in the hospital and these massive roller coaster rides, and documenting, the verses are really like documenting this journey as I healed with my family in tow. So that, I guess, the relationship between like exasperation and relief. That's such a great question. I want like a minute to think about that, because
sure,
that's a really great question.
I'll just be here thinking about Lucas Nelson.
Yeah, you just look at your photo of you and Lucas. Dun, 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 dun. I think that for me, you know, on that journey, like this roller coaster of, you know, creating music, having, playing the Opry, being in the hospital, meeting Wynonna Judd, my brother suffering an awful brain damage, and then going on tour with Willie Nelson, going on tour with Bob Dylan. Like, it is never one thing. Everything is exasperation and relief simultaneously. Mm. And I feel like there's never any relief. And I feel like there's always joy. So those things can coexist at all times. And they do coexist in most of us at all times. We carry both great pain and great joy simultaneously. And a lot of the times, like having to move forward without Jay next to me on stage, even though he's in my heart at all times, having him not physically there next to me, I've had to be very intentional about choosing the joy, because if I didn't, I would not carry on.
Yeah. 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 Like it's like a muscle you have to work.
Yeah. And it's hard, because my default, I don't know if everyone, but I think most humans are like this. My default is to slide into the the lows of the roller coaster, I guess, especially as a creative, you know, and choosing to kind of climb that peak. It's, you know, getting invited to tour with Willie Nelson and Bob Dylan and to play the Grand Ole Opry. Like, these are all lifelong dream moments. Mm-hmm. And there is a, you know, at first I was like, it's so unfair. All the joy is being sucked out of these moments right now. But that is life. Like, we always exist between carrying equal amounts of pain and love and joy. And that's actually a lot of what Foolish Heart is about as well. Like, hearkening back to that track is, you know, carrying that heart carries all these things. And we depend so much on, like, thinking our heart is going to carry all of this. And it just breaks over and over again. But it's also strong and it carries us again. So yeah, you kind of learn, like, you don't get to have joy in a vacuum. You don't have pain in a vacuum. Thank God. You know, we carry both, and that's what keeps us living.
Yeah. I feel like I think about this every time someone's like, so how's it going? And you're like, it's terrible. And it's also like the best.
Yeah. How do I answer this? Yeah.
The town girl, put the sun to bed, drowning out the worries of the week ahead. On my arrival, your lipstick smile felt like welcome home. Made you fall, but it just makes me feel.
Cowgirl, this is what the record is named for, the neon cowgirl on Broadway in Nashville who's been watching your career and breaking your heart since you were 16. In this song, it seems like you want to be the neon cowgirl. Like, how has your relationships to her evolved over the years?
I think that in that song, like where I say, can I be the girl lighting up the sky? It's this longing again to escape the pain and the survival mode. It's like, can I just be this, like, glowing, beautiful beacon that doesn't have a heart, that doesn't have emotions? She's just there to be beautiful and bring joy and light and inspire people. But ultimately, she's empty. She's not real. And so there's this longing sometimes to be that empty, beautiful joy, like light. But then it comes back to, you know, that reality of existing simultaneously in joy and pain. Because the joy is so much sweeter for the pain. And the pain is survivable because of the joy.
I feel like that answer kind of helps me with the next question, which is about the image that you use of the neon cowgirl. I think it's the album cover where it's a painting. I was really surprised to learn it was a painting because it's so beautiful. How you portray her is interesting. Like, she's not lit up. It's daytime. And it's like at this angle where you see the neon outline of the lights kind of like not lining up with her painted outline. Like she definitely looks insane. What was your thought process in portraying her like this?
That magic is all Kelly Talbot, the artist. And what drew me to Kelly's work was she always, almost always, I mean, sometimes she paints neon when it's lit, but she almost always paints neon when it's daytime, when it's kind of zoomed in really closely. You see all the rust, you see all the, how the sausage is made, basically. Mm. And, you know, you get the painting behind of the beautiful cowgirl, but then you see all the inner workings and the tubes and the screws and the rust. And I loved that. I love how she finds the beauty in a neon sign that, you know, is only deemed useful at night. Really, it's made to be seen at night, but mm-hmm. she finds the beauty in that kind of brokenness in the sunlight. So you are seeing like the shadows, which make it look kind of, you know, off kilter, and you're seeing the warts and all. And that definitely symbolizes me as an artist, you know, like warts and all. And, but yeah, that was all Kelly. And she did a painting. This is what kind of drew me to her. She had a painting of the neon cowgirl in Nashville, and it's a huge piece. And she had it at an exhibit at the New Orleans Jazz Fest where she was commissioned to do the poster. That's how I kind of was introduced to her, because I was playing the festival. So I saw this incredible poster, and then I sought her out and like hunted down this exhibit. And the original painting of the neon cowgirl is, again, just her face, like my album cover. And it's like the size of my wall. It's huge. And when I reached out to her, we'd become friends online. And then we met at the jazz festival because I'm such a fan. And then she was a fan of mine, and it was this mutual admiration society. And we became really good buddies. She suggested we become pen pals, like pen to paper pen pals. And I'm like, yes, I love this idea. I haven't had a pen to paper pen pal since I was a kid. And so I reached out to her online, and I just said, listen, I've written this song inspired by your painting, like of the neon cowgirl on Broadway in Nashville. I don't know if it's going to make it onto the album, but I just wanted you to know. And she was like, that's so cool. And then as we progressed, you know, I said, it is going to be on the album. And not only is it going to be on the album, it's going to be the title track. And I said, would you consider, like, how would I go about, like, could I license that image as the album cover? And she said, yeah, absolutely, I'd be honored. And then I said, actually, could you, like, would this be crazy? Could you paint her as me? Like, could you do my own cover as like the neon cowgirl, but with my face? And she's like, oh my God, yes, I would love to do this. And Kelly like goes in an Airstream trailer for a big part of the year with her husband and her pet duck and her pet cat. I am not making this up. And they travel and do these road trips all over America doing they go for these neon sign hunts where they find these old vintage neon signs, and they usually spend a day, and she photographs them in the morning, the afternoon, the evening, gets them in all the different lights. And then she takes them back after their trip. And then the rest of the year she's painting them. And so she was poised to go on the road, and she said, I'm bringing you with me. And it's a small album sized painting. And she said, I'm bringing my paints and my little, you know, traveling studio, which is not something that she would normally do. This is kind of the time when she's photographing. So mm-hmm. I kind of love that she was painted while she was traveling the highways, just as I was when I was writing the album.
Wow.
Like
wow.
All of this kind of incredible synergy.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing. And also explains, because I was like, I don't know where the Neon Cowgirl is in Nashville. I've only been on Broadway once. Mm. So it's like, I was like, this looks different than the album cover. Must be a different Neon Cowgirl. So the actual Neon Cowgirl on Broadway is at a boot store.
So she used to be over a boot store. Like, it's still the same building. She's in.
Okay.
I think it was originally an old bank. Like, she's been there for decades. And she was kind of the cowboy boot store sign. Mm-hmm. I now, when I drove by the last week, actually, it used to have her, like, she's a full body figure. So you don't. And she's kind of looking over her shoulder, holding a guitar, wearing these incredible cowboy boots. And it used to say boots down the side. Now it says Luke's. So I don't, I'm like, is this like, I don't know if it's Luke Combs, like, you know, star bar down, or if it's like, if it's now a bar called Luke's or something. So they've changed the lettering, which I was surprised to see. Yeah.
We need to get a correspondent.
Yes, we need the hard journalism. Yes.
And the album cover is you. Okay. That's cool. Yes. Fucking cool, Tammy.
I try, babe. I try.
The song Borrow My Boots is about women supporting women. Let's hear it. Mm-hmm. Inspired by Ashley McBride, who actually co-wrote the song with you and Shelley Fairchild, about Ashley supporting you. It also features Grace Bowers, who you first championed when Grace arrived in Nashville as a teen. So in my eyes, I feel like when I see you on social media and you're like, look at this historical place I am. Here's 7 facts about this country singer that you only barely know about. In my eyes, you're a country music historian.
Oh, I love that.
So historically, like, what is the track record for women supporting women in Nashville? Like, how have you known it to change or have seen it change?
I think it has always been there because when you work in a hostile territory, which for women, country music unfortunately is, and I mean, all you have to do is just look at the cold hard facts, the statistics that only less than 10% of airplay last year in 2024 was of songs by female artists on country music radio across the country. And those songs that were played by women were predominantly in the overnights. So this is not an opinion. This is not emotion. These are statistical facts that women do not get played on country music radio. And so I think it has bred a community of women who, you know, there are, of course, instances where it breeds kind of this competition in certain people where it's like, there's only one chance. So I need to take that chance and exclude others. But that, to me, has never been the fault of the female artists. They are being bred to feel that way because it's the truth. You know, so many labels were like, we have one female, or, you know, we've already got our female artist out of the roster of 40 men that we have, you know, and you're the token female. So it is a very hard truth. But I think since the very beginning, you know, you get people like that, but the ones that I have always kind of modeled myself after and looked up to, you know, hearing stories of Patsy Cline and Loretta Lynn. And when Loretta Lynn first came to town and she was having success, and there she talks about this group of women that wanted to lock her out in Nashville. And Patsy just went, forget that. She invited her along to like a lunch where all these women were and walked in and said, this is our new little gal. This is Loretta. And, you know, like Patsy helped dress her. She taught her, took her under her wing. She showed her how to shave her legs. Like, these are all stories that Loretta tells in her book, Me and Patsy and Me. And like, there has always been this network of support and lifting each other up because they know they're in the trenches together. And they know that, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. And I think women in country music have always been the ones to kind of form that community, lift each other up. But to, you know, the experience, the things that I've experienced with people like Sunny Sweeney or Ashley McBride, Shelley Fairchild, like Winona, you know, all of these people are above and beyond because they're in an industry where you have to be above and beyond supportive to get a little toenail through the door. And you know, I was taught by women, like when I first moved to New Zealand, there's an act here, the Top Twins, and they're two sisters, two lesbian sisters that are country music comedians, and they are icons in New Zealand. And they were the first ones to scoop me up and take me under their wings. And I remember the night I met them, it was at the Country Music Awards. They were being honored for like a lifetime achievement. And one of them said in her speech, you know, in this industry, as a marginalized person, whether that be LGBTQ or female in a country music world landscape, the minute that you get a little crack in the door open, you push that thing as far as you can for everyone to follow through and for everyone to get a chance to get as many people through that door as you can while you have that door open. And they did it for me, and I try to do it for whoever I can with my platform that I have. And as Sunny always says, you know, what goes around comes around. The way you treat people, it comes back to you. And so I've been on the receiving end of that kindness and support so many times. And so I can't help but keep feeding that to the others coming up behind me. Just this morning, I got my phone rang and it was Ashley McBride FaceTiming me to say that at Stagecoach, which she just played last weekend, they were asking her in an interview, what's your hype song? And she said, my song, Careless Woman, is her hype song. And she plays it all the time, like before she goes on stage or to awards shows. And she even made a t-shirt with like the lyric on it with my face on it like that. And she's like, I'm just the Tammy Nielsen street team, you know, her and Shelly, her and Shelly Fairchild are my promo team that I don't even have to pay. But yeah, they, she said that then they just started blasting the song through the speakers at Stagecoach. And I'm like,
oh, how cool.
Right. And I'm like, who does that? Like, women do that. Yeah. It's amazing.
So after listening to this album, reading about the album, watching you achieve all these cool recent milestones, do you feel like you belong in Nashville?
I think that a part of me always belongs in Nashville. I think that I've like lived in Nashville in my heart, in my head, and in my body, like throughout my life. And again, I go back to that, like the 10-year town. I have put in my time in Nashville when I was, you know, 16, and when I was 18, and when I was 23, and when I was, you know, 38. And, you know, like these are all blocks of time that I have lived in Nashville, but it's just all broken up because I just never do anything normal. But that's okay.
That's the literal answer. But like the metaphorically, do you feel like you belong?
Oh, like, I see.
Nashville?
I feel more than ever a kind of acceptance and embrace from the community, the chosen family in Nashville. I don't think I'll ever feel like I belong in the country music industry. I don't know that on paper, a 47-year-old plus-sized mother of two who lives in New Zealand is ever going to be like, oh, that ticks all our boxes. Like, sign on the dotted line. We can't wait. You know, I had a friend say to me, I played the Opry a couple weeks ago, and I said on stage, like, I'm a 47-year-old mother of two, and your dreams can still come true. Don't give up. And she said to me, oh my God, that was so brave that you said your age, like on the stage of the Grand Ole Opry and in Nashville, like everyone's trying to hide their age and you just said it. And I said, oh, that wasn't brave. That was just stupid. But like, I will never be on paper what the industry wants. But to me, Nashville is so much more than the industry. It's now its community. And it's family, which I'm so lucky to be part of there, even from a distance. It's unheard of. I remember someone saying to me, you have to move here. You can't build a career. You can't achieve these things unless you live here. It's a 10-year town. You got to pay your dues just like everyone else. And I've paid my dues, but I've paid them differently. Mm-hmm. I've paid them differently than everyone else. And
hell yeah.
Yeah. And so I think where you belong is where you feel love and acceptance. And I do from the chosen people that are my community there.
Let's do a lightning round featuring questions about your family's 5-month trip.
Okay. Here we go.
Who is driving the RV?
Oh my God. My husband, definitely. Like, I said to him when we talked about doing this, I'm like, there's no way I will ever drive an RV. Don't tell him this, or don't tell him, he already knows it, but don't tell him I admitted I'm a terrible driver. Oh. And compound that with, like, in New Zealand, we drive on the other side of the road. So I've been driving on the other side of the road for like 20 plus years now. So
all right.
I won't even drive
no more.
A minivan. I won't drive like a tiny little anything in outside of New Zealand. Yeah.
What is on the stereo?
On the stereo right now is the brand new Alison Krauss and Union Station Arcadia album.
What was on the stereo in the RV?
Oh, sorry. In the stereo.
That's fine, too. That's a fine answer, though.
I thought you meant right now. Sorry, I got to go back to the trip. On the stereo, we didn't have the ability to play anything. We had to listen to radio. But luckily, the radio that came with the RV was Sirius XM. So we just had it 24/7 on Willie's Roadhouse. Of course.
Wow.
Of course.
What luck.
And that's why I say in Salvation Mountain, Willie on the radio keeping me awake.
It's true. True story. Okay. As agreed on by the family, what were the best road snacks?
Oh, we were just talking about this the other day. So we'd always stop at Love's Truck Stop, which is also in the song. And my snack was always either, depending if I wanted salty or sweet, I either got beef jerky or Nutter Butter Bites. Oh my God. Ooh. Like I could live on those. And I did for 5 months. So those were my snacks of choice that I'd like rotate between the salty and sweet. Yeah.
What was the best road trip game?
I think literal like card games, because you're in a motorhome. So we could actually sit at a table and play cards, and me and the kids, well, Grant did all the driving. Sorry.
Okay, this is the last one. What is one sightseeing stop you absolutely had to see?
Oh, just one? Oh, that's too hard. Okay, I have to choose between two. Like, it's a tie for me.
Okay.
We all right. wrote, like, down our wish list before we went. And we were like, you know, wrote a big wish list of all the places we wanted to see. And each person had to get at least one or two of their wish list throughout the trip. And on my list was Graceland and Dollywood. And so those were two of my, like, I could not go without seeing them. Places that I hadn't been yet, which is wild to me growing up on
the
road.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
You'd never been to either of them.
But the biggest sacrifice was Salvation Mountain. Like, none of my family knew about it. They didn't care. It was literally, it was like 105 degrees in the motorhome. The air conditioning stopped working because it was so hot, and we were all dying. And I'm like, we could die out here. It is so, like, you're in the desert.
Oh my God.
In the desert. And my family, we drove like, what, 5 or 6 hours in 105 degrees just so I could see Salvation Mountain. So that's love and sacrifice.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. That is, wait, what were you talking about earlier? That is exasperation and relief.
Quite literally.
Well, Tammy, thank you so much. You know I love you.
You know I love you. Thank you for taking the time. And your questions are always, I'm always like, oh God, can we pause? Can you edit this out? Because I have to, like, I need to think and be worthy of this question.
Send them ahead of time next time.
Yeah.
Give you a little bit of a break. This episode of Basic Folk was produced by Anthony Cabrera. Dietrich Strauss composes our music. Basic Folk is a production of The Bluegrass Situation. You can find all of our episodes there. You can check us out on FolkAlley.com or Folk Alley's mobile app. You can search for Basic Folk on the SiriusXM app. Go to our website, BasicFolk.com, or you can listen wherever you get podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, perhaps you should share it with your friend who is really into retro vintage cowgirl stuff, particularly like neon electrified cowgirls. That friend would definitely enjoy this conversation and Tammy's new album, so send it to that friend. All right, thanks for listening all the way to the end. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.